This podcast is supported by the original organic bedding and bath brand, Koyuchi.
Koyuchi has spent 35 years pioneering quality organic textiles, long before the word organic became, you know, trendy. But words matter to Koyuchi. Words like craftsmanship, longevity, and wellness. So what does the word wellness mean to Koyuchi? It means that all of our products are absolutely free from harsh chemicals and dangerous toxins that can seep into your skin. It means effortless style that looks as good as it feels with naturally breathable, pre-washed organic cotton. And what does all of that mean to you? Well, it means that you can sleep well in Koyuchi's crisp, cool, luxuriously soft sheets that are ethically made and made with you in mind. Live well, sleep well with Koyuchi. Get 15% off your first order when you visit koyuchi.com. That's koyuchi.com to get 15% off. Koyuchi.com.
No problem, no problem. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You said you're in Eastern time, but you have, like, a very Southern accent. So where are you from?
I'm North Carolina.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Don't hold it against me.
No, not at all. I love North Carolina. It's probably pretty warm there, huh?
Yeah, it is. We've got customers kind of all over the country, and that's probably one of the biggest things people talk about up north, having horses and having to deal with the weather and things of that nature. So it's kind of cool to be down here and not have to deal with the winters like you guys do.
You're right. I know. You're right.
So tough. I got to ask you, where did Laramie come from? I have never seen this name before in my life.
Really?
Really.
A lot of people they're like, oh, you, your parents named you after Laramie, Wyoming. That's actually not true. It's from a movie. I'm not exactly sure what movie. I can't remember right now, but it was from a movie, so.
Well, how cool is that?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely happy with it. I think it's pretty cool. So,
well, I think it's really cool that you're talking to me kind of on a whim. So I met you, well, at Terry. We just talked to Terry. I'm doing some shirts and stuff for Terry. And he was up there. You guys, you own Clark Farms Quarter Horses. And you guys just had a colt starting competition. That's not all you do, though, right?
Right, yeah. So we, for probably, oh gosh, maybe 4 decades now, or maybe even 5, we've bred and raised registered quarter horses. So obviously my dad, my grandfather, my grandmother kind of started the whole operation, and it has just kind of been passed down to me about a decade ago, like 9-10 years ago. So everything... like pedigree wise that we have here right now is I've had a hand in making sure that is here. And that's really exciting to me because it's fun and interesting to me to breed horses and see what you get each year and see how they ride. I think it's so important for these breeders to actually ride the horses they breed. I'm not sure how many people actually do. I think a lot of people, maybe I shouldn't say that, but I feel like maybe there are some people out there that breed horses that they never step foot on, and how can you kind of know what you're breeding if you don't know what they're going to, how they're going to ride or what they're going to be like?
So wait, you keep all of the babies until they're ready to be broke, or do you sell them as babies?
No, so we have about 40 babies each year.
That's a lot of babies.
It is. It actually is. We've slowly kind of, when I first started, we had about 20 to 25 babies and broodmares, and then we've just kind of kept buying different broodmares, obviously, because we need to expand genetics sometimes as much as we can, but all while also maintaining the integrity of our own program. Mm-hmm. But anyway, about half of them will sell as babies, and the other half will typically remain here until they're yearling to two-year-old. And then I'm kind of left over with probably about 10 to 15 two-year-olds, and that's where the colt starting came in.
Cool.
There was a girl and I here, just us two working together, 365 days a year, no men involved, and we were to be honest, for lack of better terms, we were lazy and didn't want to start all these two-year-olds by ourselves. And we're like, we should just start a colt starting competition. So 6 years ago, we had our first colt starting competition. We had six adults, and it just kind of grew up into what it is now. This yeah. past year was really special, but
It's pretty ingenious, though, if you ask me. I mean, that's one way to kill two birds with one stone.
It was. I know. I don't even know what made us think of it, but one day we're just like, we have all these two-year-olds every year. Why don't we have a colt starting? And I'm like, oh, my gosh, yeah, that's genius. So
yeah.
It was just two women that didn't have the time to do it all because we have, you know, over 100 head of horses here that need fed and taken care of and vetted and bred, and it's a lot of work, especially for two women, that's for sure.
Well, so you do it all there at your place, and you say bred, like you just said that, you know, horses mm-hmm. get bred and stuff. You do everything, all of it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we offer live
Holy
cover.
Holy cow.
I also collect our own stallion semen, so we're shipping semen all the time here. So I kind of have, like, I wear many hats, I like to say, because we kind of do everything. From the time that the baby is an embryo until, you know, they're 2 years old, they're here. So it's a three-year process for every single horse on the place, unless they stay to be a broodmare or stallion or something.
So I'm on your website now, actually, and I'm kind of looking at your stallions. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm. We got 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot to take care of at one spot.
Yeah. So we run on about 3,000 to 3,500 acres. There's multiple farms. I think a lot of people are, especially being in Pennsylvania, are kind of confused when they come here and they're like, we have to drive, you know, 10, 15 minutes to a different farm where there's horses, and they're like, where are we going?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I can't keep all the horses right here. That would be nice if I, like, you know, everything was here. But,
yeah.
You know, we can, and we try to rotational graze as much as possible, so we're not we're not using up stored hay or anything like that. I try to use pastures as sparingly as I can and put horses where they can be sustained for as long as possible.
No, that's the operation. I mean, that's a really big operation. It's not, when you first look at it, like I'm first looking at it now, I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, it's maybe one or two stallions. It's not, but to hear you talk, it's like way bigger than what it's presented, and which is cool. I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get lucky. So most of the stallions can winter together. A lot of people don't really know that, but we do house about 3 or 4 stallions together in the winter in one pasture, and they talk to each other here and there, and they sniff each other all the time, and it is what it is, but they get used to each other, and they're fine out there. And then there's a couple that we keep in, you know, close to home, some of the older ones. There's 2 older ones on the website there that we take a little closer care of just because of their age. Really, it's not too hateful. It's we just, like I said, I try to utilize the land as much as I can and make it as easy on myself as I can.
right. No, yeah, absolutely. So do you guys ever travel off of the farm and show any of the horses at all? You just kind of keep them there and then people mm-hmm. come shop there?
Yeah, so we do. I have taken a few this past year. A boy that works here had just taken a mare to a sorting a few weeks ago, and that was the last anything was shown here, but that was just a few weeks ago. We've hit kind of peak hay season right now. So everything is kind of at a standstill right now just until we can get all our hay put up, you know.
Yeah.
For the winter time, but yes, we do show outside of here, but a lot of people will come here also, and a lot of horses sell sight unseen, which is fabulous. I'm sure anybody would prefer that. But yeah, so that has been very helpful. Facebook has been amazing. Like free advertisement, and as long as you just keep up with it and just keep people intrigued, it can be a really useful tool.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I was just talking to somebody about it the other day. I was like, you know, it's a double-edged sword with anything. But, you know, you would never have met some people that you're able to meet unless you were on social media, you know?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
So I bet that does do a lot for you. Now, do you guys, obviously you don't offer board or lessons or any of that type of stuff. It's just strictly kind of breeding and that type of ordeal, right?
So I did offer lessons way back when I first started. I was still in college at the time. So I kind of took over when I was 18. And then I went off to, I commuted to college an hour each way. and ran this place by myself. Now, there wasn't as many broodmares. Like I said, there's probably only 20, 25 at the time. But
So pack it up. So what did you go to college for?
I had originally wanted to be a vet, so I started out pre-vet. And I realized very quickly that I did not want to be a vet. I wanted to breed and raise horses, and I'm so glad I did. But I am not someone that doesn't finish things, so I switched my major because I didn't want to just make $15 an hour as a vet tech. Nothing against vet techs, like we need them, but that just wasn't my journey.
So I completely agree with what you're saying. They don't get paid enough.
They don't get paid enough.
With, that's for sure.
Absolutely not. No. So I switched my major actually to math education because I was like, if the horse business or the horse industry kind of fails or falls through, you know, whatever, I can always just be a teacher and they have great hours. I was really thinking more of like a freedom thing, and if I did need to do horses on the side, that would be a job that I definitely could kind of do both. But it wasn't something that I was tied to, you know, 12 months of the year, so.
Yeah.
But.
Well, that's another profession that doesn't get paid enough for what they deal with.
I know.
Right?
You're right. For sure. I was looking at it more for, like, the schedule and the benefits and things like that, more so than the pay on that one. But, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, but, well, like you said, you could make it up for horse stuff. You would have time to be able to, you know, do the horse stuff. So, all right, well, that leads me to my next question. Obviously, you were already just, I mean, you were just, like, born into it. Like, you were probably around horses before you even came here because your parents started this, right?
Yep.
Or your grandparents?
My grandparents, yep.
God, Jesus Christ, that's a long time. That's pretty awesome, though, to keep that going as long as it's been going because you don't, you know, not a lot of people do that.
So, it's funny, I'm actually, I think, the sixth generation that's been here on this particular farm. Now, the horses haven't been here that long, but I think the first generation had come here, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think they came here with a team of oxen and a cart, and I'm pretty sure they farmed tomatoes for Heinz ketchup. I'm pretty sure that was, like, the first farming kind of operation that happened six generations ago.
Ketchup to quarter horses.
yeah, that would be a great title, actually. And then
I know, I like that. No, I like that because I love homegrown. I mean, there's nothing like homegrown tomatoes, so come on now.
Yeah, and then it just kind of, they've had cows, and my brother runs a really extensive Angus operation right down the street. So, yeah, we're all kind of, we all got something going on.
Yeah. Well, so, and then I wanted to also ask you about, because it was funny that Terry had mentioned you. I don't know even know how he mentioned you, but, because he said he was going to go do his, he's going to win his championship again, which he did.
He did, I know, little sucker.
But I happened to run across your page, and then I saw the photo of the zebra, so I got to ask you about the photo of the zebra. I know it caused a little bit of controversy, but...
Yes.
That's It's legal, though, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's definitely very legal.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, dang, they're giving her a hard time over this. I don't think she'd posted it.
No, it is definitely very legal. So my family are very avid hunters. I mean, they go. My brother has been to Russia, New Zealand, Africa. They've been to Mexico. I mean, my dad's been a lot of places too. This particular zebra, the story behind it is my dad had went hunting with this group of people back in March of this year, and so they became friends, obviously, and the manager of the ranch had contacted my dad and said, hey, I have this zebra stallion here. He's killing all of our, you know, little lambs and goats and just, like, causing a ruckus.
I heard that they were assholes.
Yeah, so I actually wanted a zebra. Side story, I wanted a pet zebra, and my vet was like, okay, but I'm not working on your zebra. Like, she was, like, very adamant about it. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I guess I didn't realize they were like that either. So anyway, we went down. The manager of the ranch was like, will you come and kill it, obviously? And my dad's like, yeah, you know, I wanted a zebra. My brother had shot one in Africa many moons ago. And my dad was like, you want to go with me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And meanwhile, I'm 34 weeks pregnant. I'm like swollen, uncomfortable, but it was so much fun. And it's not like we went out there and shot a quarter horse or something. It's really funny how people are so upset about the zebra, but that's okay.
Well, it is funny, actually, because, like, we always end up kind of bringing this up some way, shape, or form, because it's like we've domesticated animals that aren't really
domesticated. Yeah.
And, like, we get, like, real kind of – well, like, I was just talking about it a couple of months ago. I have to drop orders off. I ship orders internationally to Canada and Mexico. And mm-hmm. So I have to go to I have to actually go there. They don't come pick it up and drop off orders. And I was talking to the guy. We ended up talking about horse meat, which is so weird because, I mean, here in America, if you say something like that, people will just kind of like, you know, they'll just flip out and all that kind of stuff, which I get. It's cool, you know. But in other places, it's a delicacy. Like, they like it's not as big of a deal as we make things sometimes.
No. Yeah. Yeah, and it certainly wasn't, like, I didn't post it to be malicious or anything. I'm like, okay, so people can raise deer or whatever the heck they're raising and kill them and eat them, or chickens or whatever, and it's fine. But, like, we bring in, like, an equine species, and it's the end of the world. Like, I just don't understand. I really don't.
No, I'm with you. I'm totally, I'm on your side with it, because I was just kind of thinking the same thing. I was like,
Another thing is, like, people are okay with us, with people killing coyotes, and that's, like, a canine species. And I'm like,
yeah.
So that's, whatever. That's just my thought on it.
But I didn't actually know. I didn't know. I mean, I would assume that they were tags. Like, you can do the hunts that they have, like, in Africa. Like you said, your brother did one.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy those hunts and go do those types of hunts. I didn't know if it was actually, like, a tag thing here in the United States, because I keep seeing more and more zebras around. But I'm just like you. That I was told that they were little assholes. I was told that you didn't want one. Like, they were not cool to have.
Yeah, I've heard that, especially when I was on my hunt to actually, like, buy one as a pet. People were like, absolutely not. Like, don't do it. And I was like, upset because I really wanted one just to look at. You know? Like, they're so cool. Like, you drive by, like, you don't see a zebra in Pennsylvania. And then people were just like, especially when my vet said, I'm not working on it. I'm like, all right, well, I guess that means I definitely can't get one because it'll get sick and die. But,
yeah. So, well, let me ask you this. So do y'all, now, aside from the whole breeding and all this kind of good stuff, have you ever shown your, do you like to do that part of the horse industry, or you just stick to the business part of it?
When I was younger, I definitely showed a lot more. I had shown a bunch in there was an organization up here called the Northeast Stock Horse Association. I don't think it's around anymore. I think it was,
oh, cool.
I was little, like, 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever. I started there And then just had kind of shown a little here and there and sortings and pennings and things like that, or little ranch trail classes here and there. And then as I got older and I finished high school and went to college, it's really tough to find the time to go anywhere. I also got married kind of young. I was 20 when I got married, and we just kind of worked. We just continued working and trying to make sure that all the horses were taken care of and to load up after a long week to go to a show. It was tough for me. I won't lie. I mean, being studying for college and taking care of all these horses was a lot. As a 18, 19, 20-year-old person. And then I had kids. And then that just made it even tougher to get anywhere. But I'm excited for that chapter, though. I'm really excited for my kids to be able to show them way more than I do. And just, you know, figure out what they like and what they don't like and things like that.
Well, I mean, I was just fixing to say, I'm not knocking showing at all. I think it's amazing, mm-hmm. but you probably learn more from the actual, mm-hmm. like, operation perspective of
sure.
how horses are bred and raised and like, everything. Like you just said, you could probably learn more
mm-hmm.
watching
sure.
you and following you and doing that stuff than you actually can showing. Again, not knocking it, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
like, what you had to deal with was a lot more hard work.
I totally agree. I will tell you up front, I'll tell anybody up front, I absolutely love and I feel like I was put on this earth to be in the spot that I'm at. Like I don't
yeah.
need to I don't need to ride horses all day long. I don't need to train horses all day long. But what I love is making horses. I love, you know, seeing, I just called two people yesterday that had mares in that we've been trying to breed since April, and the mares kept coming up open, and I finally got to call them yesterday and tell them that their mares are bred, and it's just like the excitement that they have, and it really makes me feel good. And when people just see pictures of our babies on Facebook and they message me and they're like, I want that one, and they buy it sight unseen because they trust me, a big one is the colt starting. My gosh, this last colt starting, phenomenal. Everybody there, like, everybody just got along. Everybody helped each other. And the amount of feedback that I got from that one, just saying, like, how great the horses looked, how smoothly everything ran, how there were, I don't know, five or six vendors and, you know, a slushy truck, a food truck,
yeah.
coffee truck. I mean, it's just like, it was like a little carnival here, right, literally at my house. And it was just like, there is nothing better than that to me. And actually, I was just telling my dad that. He was asking me beforehand, he was like, do you have much interest in the two-year-olds? And I was like, you know, I don't even think about it. I never actually think about it beforehand. I don't want to say I don't care if they sell, but it's more important to me that people enjoy themselves and that the trainers actually, you know, they enjoy training the horses. They enjoy starting the horses. That
right.
is way more important to me than making a dollar, I'll be honest. I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm the most humble person. But it's just like the feedback you get, especially from this year that I got, was just like $1 million to me. So,
Yeah. Well, that speaks volumes for the character because, I mean, you know, it's like, horses is not, like me, I do embroidery and a shirt. It's not like you know, I make a bad
mm-hmm.
shirt and, okay, well, I can just fix it real quick. Horses is kind of, breeding horses is a whole other different ball game. And so.
Yeah. That's so funny you say that because I'm getting ready to go on maternity leave. Like, I know you can't see me, but I'm doing like air quotes. Because you cannot go on maternity leave in this industry, and I always tell people, I'm like, it's not like I'm making shirts or something. Like, I can't just quit for 3 months and come back to it anytime I want to. Like, I still have to oversee everything, and it is really tough. I envy you. I envy you for being able to just take a leave like that if you need to, but it's all right.
Well, you do have a lot to take care of, but obviously, I mean, do you have to, you obviously you have people there to help you that, you know, imagine keeping that many horses on a schedule and on a, on the things that you have to take care of. That's a lot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we do have, I have one full-time employee, and then my husband helps me, and I have an intern that I hired for the summer to get me through. So that's, I'm thankful for that for sure.
I'm looking at all of the pictures right now from on your online, and it took, the only thing I could think about is the man from Snowy River. That's the first thing, when I'm looking at these photos, that's exactly what I'm thinking about. These are really cool, actually. These look really great.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it just looks like, you know, it's just what raising horses is about. Like, it's just a herd of horses and just, like, kind of what it should be. Because, you know, back to what we were just saying with the whole zebras and the way America and people have kind of just domesticated things in a way they shouldn't be. It's nice to see a horse kind of be in its natural element, you know?
Yeah,
that makes sense. What I'm saying.
That's very funny that you said that. Actually, I had a mare. I have a small story for you. I had a mare that I sold that was super feral, barely halter broke. I mean, our brood mares live out in pasture. They don't ever see grain. They eat grass in the summer, hay in the winter, and they have 24/7 access to a protein tub and loose mineral, and that's it. Yeah. Like, I don't baby them. I don't do anything like that. But so I had sold this mare.
Which
that
I think
just,
is great, by the way. I think it's great to do that. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's, I do too. I'm like, but anyway, I had sold one of the mares, and I told the girl, I'm like, she's kind of feral. She's not halter broke. Like, just be careful. You know, if you're going to really work with her or whatever, that's great. She'll probably come around fast, blah, blah, blah. Well, I've had probably 5-6 foals from this mare and never had any problems. I mean, I couldn't even really get up to her if she did have problems, you know?
Yeah.
So I sold her, and she kind of lived in like a smaller pasture, maybe like a paddock type thing. I don't know if she brought her in, you know, to grain her or anything. I have no idea what the living situation was like, really. But I know it probably wasn't on 100 or 150 acres.
Right.
But the mare actually this year had a red bag foal, which the girl ended up saving, and then a couple months later, just recently, the mare had a flipped colon and colic, and she had to be put down. And I'm like, I was talking to my dad about it, and I'm like, that is just so weird to me that she's had, like, two instances like this, and I've never had an issue with her ever. And I was like, I always sometimes wonder if we as humans, and I'm guilty of it too, so it's not anybody's fault, but I'm just wondering if we kind of step in too much as humans to try to help them, and we don't kind of let them be the animal that they are, if that makes sense.
No, 110%, I agree. 150 more if I can. I totally agree. I was just talking about, I don't think people realize that horses have been, well, you probably do. I'm not telling you anything. You don't know. But non-horse people, the people that kind of got into it after Yellowstone made it popular, horse industry has kind of been its own niche until that happened. And it's like, you know, when COVID happened, it kind of put people a lot online more than real life. And so you got to see a bunch of these groups and comments and people and stuff like that. And I was just saying this thing the other day. I was like, we fed Sweet Feet. Don't even mention the word Sweet Feet now to anybody. They would flip out. But we never had any problems. We didn't have colic. Yeah. We didn't have issues. We didn't have nothing. None of that stuff happened back then. And you didn't hear about it with our friends either, like the people we rode with and the people we showed with. And so I totally agree, 110%, because it's like the more things that are made to do this, the more therapies, the more products, the more stuff that's given, it's like you see more and more and more problems.
Yeah, and I'm, like I said, I'm definitely not knocking anyone. It's just a very, it's some of these things that are happening, not just with that one, but other, you know, other horses too that I hear about. It's just so, like, coincidental. Like, why did that happen? I like to know the whys of things. So I was really intrigued whenever I had heard that that mayor passed away. But yeah, so I don't know. I couldn't answer that, but
I think you're right though. I think it's a matter of taking her from a more natural horse environment to a kind of non-natural, non-herd, smaller place. Probably caused more issues, you know. I mean, like me and Terry were talking about it, like the Mustangs out west and stuff. I mean, I understand the motive behind it. You've got you got houses going up, populations going up. There's more people making people out there. You got to have room for them, you know. And you're pushing the animals out. I totally get it. But I was kind of thinking to myself, well, why don't we just leave them alone? Like, why don't why do we have to do anything about it?
Right, like let them kind of figure it out.
Because, I mean, how did they live before us, you know? It's like humans think that nothing lived before them.
Oh, yes, I know that. Yeah, I do know that. No,
or, business, you know?
Yeah, and it's super easy. Like, I'm not saying it's easy, but it is easier on me, obviously, to not have to grain these, you know, 50, 60 horses every day if they can just live outside and take care of themselves. And another thing I've noticed is we buy horses from all over, and I don't think a lot of people know this either, but horses have to acclimate to certain environments. It takes about, in my experience, it takes about a year and a half to 2 years for a horse to truly acclimate. So if I bought one from South Dakota and I haul it here, she will definitely probably lose some weight and struggle a little bit. We'll have to help her out a little extra. And by the end of the second year, she's like, okay, I'm a Pennsylvania horse now. It's super weird. It's something that, like, no one talks about. I think because, you know, I don't want to say normal people, but other people that don't have as many horses, they just take them from one, you know, one grain stall to the next, you know, across the country, so they're not having to kind of deal with the acclimation process. But that is something that I have learned from just being here, and I think that it's really something that people should, like, know, because I think it's kind of cool, actually. I found out so many things working here and just kind of being here on my own, just figuring things out as I go along that people don't really talk about, but that I know about, if that makes sense.
I'm picking up what you're throwing. I trust what you're saying because you live it day in and day out. This is like in your blood. So, but you are right though, because you know your average person, like even me, because I'm definitely not where you are, but like even me, we can get a horse and buy it from a state above me and bring it down here. I wouldn't be able to really see what you're talking about, but you're saying it takes them a minute to try to just kind of get back into the groove.
Well, if you think about it, the nutrients in the grass are kind of like totally different, right? I mean, the grass we have here and the grass that they have out west or in Texas or Florida or wherever is totally different than what we have here. So for them to kind of go from one, you know, one type of grass to another, even if it's the same type of grass, maybe the protein's different, maybe there's different vitamins or whatever in the grass or soil or whatever, but it definitely does. It takes them a second for these broodmares to kind of figure it out, which is, I think, is really interesting.
That is pretty interesting, actually, because I mean, you know, I wouldn't think a horse would need. I mean, I know they need to figure out their pecking order and they need to try to get like their boundaries and their vicinities, but you wouldn't think that they would need to settle in.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that either.
So you guys do buy horses outside of what you've got there?
Yeah, so mainly, you know, some of our stallions and mares are related. They're brother and sister or their mother and father, you know, so we have to kind of bring in a few different bloodlines here and there. I really just, like, scour Facebook a lot, and I'll just look, or I have people text me or call me and be like, hey, I have this horse for sale, and if it's a good deal and I'm comfortable buying it, then I'll buy it. It's nice to have, you know, some different things going on and add new things going on. My dad, we were actually just talking the other day because like I said a little bit ago, two of our stallions are getting older. And they're two stallions that I'm really proud of, and we are soon going to need to buy another new stallion that's not, you know, related to these two.
Right.
Because I have so many daughters of them both, and I want to cross on something else. So keeping my eyes and ears open just for a good young stallion that's, you know, like we can ride, that's broke to ride and show if we want to. I had, we had bought a finished rein cow horse stallion, oh my gosh, maybe like 8-9 years ago now. I don't know how long exactly, but he's sterile now, but he has been just a dream to have. I mean, I didn't realize how important a broke stallion was until I had one, and I like it because you can really showcase your program through a stallion like that.
Yeah.
You can take them anywhere. You can do whatever you want with them, and I will really be on the look for something. The tough part right now about quarter horse stallions is that they're all kind of really bred similarly. So
they're bred what?
Similarly, as in like everything is bimetallic cat, or everything is by highbrow cat, or dual ray, or you know. And it's, we have a son of Peptidoon's Mall that we stand right now, and I adore him and his babies. But it's like, where do you go from there? Like, how do you top that is kind of where I'm at right now.
That is a good point, actually, because it's like, you know, it's so hard. I've always thought, even not even with horses, but everything, like what you mm-hmm. just said, how do you top that? You know, you get used to something and being in the industry and being considered top of the line, the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
You've also got to keep your eye open for what's coming up behind it, because it's not, I mean, things change. It's not going to stay that way forever.
Right.
So, you know, to be able to keep up with staying here, but also be lookout for what's going to be the new best of the best, the new thing. That's
yeah.
hard to kind of figure out, stay on top of.
Yeah, I no doubt. I've been looking for a while, not that I'm anticipating anything to change soon, or at least I pray not. But we do have to figure out, you can't just be stagnant with, you know, no big name stallion to offer to the public, because Pepto's Blueprint has really opened a lot of doors for us. I remember purchasing him 3 years ago, I guess, now, and it just, like, changed the whole trajectory of the breeding program. I mean, people were calling me left and right, wanting shipped semen on them, wanting to bring theirs here, and it was, I couldn't believe it. If you would have told me before that, like, oh, a stallion makes a big difference, I would have been like, yeah, yeah, sure. But then when we got him, it was like, man, it really opened a lot of doors, and I'm so thankful for him.
Oh,
every day.
Beautiful.
I really am. He's something, and I tell everybody, I'm like, you've never seen a horse like this. Like, you have to see him in person. He's incredible. I've seen so many horses in my life, and I've never, ever seen one like him. He's just incredible.
He's gorgeous. I'm going to need more pictures of this. I need more internet pictures for people like me.
he's honestly, like, the nicest horse I've ever seen. He's just incredible. I can't even put it into words, honestly.
Yeah. So you get to, it's a good thing that you get to handle these guys, and you can kind of make it, because, you know, I've had this conversation before, you know, you're outside, brand new to the horse industry, even people that have been in the horse industry for a long time, you say the word stallion, they all of a sudden tense up, you know, they don't necessarily know what to think of it, they get scared of it, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that you handle these is
mm-hmm.
really kind of speaks volumes.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I was at a horse expo 1 year. I'd taken that rein cow horse stallion down there just to show in, like, a stallion demo type thing. And there's other people there with stallions also. And it's so funny because a lot of people, they'll yell out to the crowd, stallion coming, like, be careful.
Right.
And I'm just like, I'm just walking my stallion through the, like, everything, like he's a broke gelding. And I think that a lot of people make it a big deal, and then the stallion feeds off of that, and they're like, oh, yeah. I'm a stallion. I have to act like it. And I'm like, no, you really don't. We can walk through here like you're gelding, and you will.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to calm down. It's not that big of a deal.
No, it's not at all. It's really not. We don't need to make it. We don't need to make it worse than it can be. Gosh, some stallions are tough, but.
Yeah. But you've got a pretty good string there that you got now.
Oh, gosh, yes. I would trust anybody to handle them, yeah.
And now, so when people bring mares, people will bring their mare to you, and you live cover them there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Okay, now they take their mare back home, and they can fold them out at home, or do you keep the mares there and fold them out there?
No, thank goodness. I would be a nervous wreck if I had to fold anybody's horses out, because I'll tell you why. Well, all of my babies are born outside in the pasture. I check on them. I do foal checks every morning, the first thing before I even feed horses. And if there's a new one, we run out and we grab it up, because usually, you know, at 7, 8 in the morning, they're still pretty fresh, and we can get our hands on them, and we'll treat their navels with iodine and just kind of love all over them for a second and let them go, yeah. And then that's the end of it. I think a lot of people were like, I can't believe you, like, don't put them in a stall. And I'm like, the only problems I've ever had with babies have been ones born in a stall. And that's really
oh,
sad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I try not to do too much. I try not to get involved too much, but I do want to make sure that their umbilical cord is, or their umbilical area is clean. And I've had a few babies get infections through their umbilical area, and that is fatal, so I do try to avoid that as much as possible. But otherwise, they're just out there. They figure it out. The mares do so much better out there. I've never, speaking of the red bag thing from earlier, I've never had a red bag. I'm knocking on wood.
Right, right, me too.
But I mean, it's really simple, actually. I know my brother, he calves, I don't know, 150 Angus calves every year or whatever, and he's checking them. He's doing, like, every
she
4 hours.
She says 150 like it's nothing.
Well, I know. Well, he's like, we're so used to it, I guess, but
yeah.
He, like, he's out there every couple hours checking on them, and they're all in pens, and I'm just like, man, that could not be for me. I, like, sleep too much.
Right. Yeah, no, and I think it's cool as hell that you have this big operation that's been running for, you know, so many years, and you literally mm-hmm. just leave it like it's supposed to be left alone. Like, you really
yeah.
just let it be natural. Like what you just said, okay, if that's mm-hmm. if they had the baby, you're going to check that and just kind of
mm-hmm.
let it be. I think that produces a better horse, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying
yeah.
it. Obviously it does.
Yeah. I'll have people that I can always tell also when horses have foaled inside or in a stall, versus horses that foal out in, you know, the herd setting like we have. And not, I get it, not everybody, you know, they can afford that, or not everybody has that luxury to keep them outside like that. But babies are so much more bonded to their mother when they're born out in herd setting in the pasture versus babies that are born in a stall. And I say that because, like, just for instance, walking with their mother, if I'm leading the mare to a baby that was born outside in a pasture herd setting, they are like glue to their mother. They don't leave, they don't wander off, they don't get curious, they don't do any of that.
Yeah.
Ones that are born in a stall, they're like, oh, what's over here? What's over here? What's over here? And it's like, oh, my gosh, you guys, like, stay with us. We're still going somewhere. But
that's so weird, and that's so cool. I mean, it's weird and interesting that is something that you've noticed, because
yeah.
that kind of makes sense if you think about it, because if they are born out in a herd setting and it's
mm-hmm.
so wide open, to me, if I was a foal, I'd be like, all right, let me stay close to this lady.
Yeah, it's just another one of those weird things that I've noticed over the years. Like, oh, man, it's really cool. And I think those little things, not like me in particular, but noticing those tiny details like that is what really makes a person in any industry, like, extraordinary. I'm not saying I am. I'm just saying that people that pay attention to things like that, to small details, are very important to any industry, no matter what it is. If it's, I don't know, working at Sheetz or if it's working right. in a bank or whatever. Like, it's, if you're going to be in an industry, you have to notice the small details and you have to just pay attention. A lot of people
That's
don't
funny
pay
you
attention
said Sheetz.
Anymore.
Do y'all have Sheetz up there? Do you have Sheetz up there?
Oh, yes. I love Sheetz. Do you have
Stop
Sheetz?
Stop it. I love Sheetz. I'm drinking. It's so funny you said that because I love their iced coffee. I love all. They have really good food.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know. I didn't even think about. I didn't even think about it being like a location-based business. But yeah, no, we have Sheetz. Yeah.
I didn't know. Well, I asked that because I think I spoke to somebody else, and I don't remember where they're at, but they said they didn't have it. So I'm going to have to Google that and see if Sheetz is kind of like in a particular area or if they are all over the U.S. or not. I don't know, but
no.
I love Sheetz, and that's really cool you said that.
No, I know they're not all over. I thought they would stop, like, more north of you, though, but maybe not.
I don't know. I'm going to have to Google how far Sheetz is out. I do know that they were started in, like, West Virginia or Virginia was, like, one of the main, like, the first one or whatever, and then it, you know, sprouted. But that's funny you said that. I absolutely love Sheetz. Have you had their tacos?
Oh, of course. I've had, like,
Stop
everything
it.
On the menu. They're so good.
They are good.
Yeah, and then you go to, like, Wawa or, I'm trying to think of what is down south. I guess there's Wawa down there. And I'm trying to think of what's in Florida because we go there all the time. But, like, there's, like, you go there and it's like, this is not Sheetz. Like, I need Sheetz down here.
Yeah. Let me get some cheap gas station food because it is good.
Yeah. It really is. Oh, my God.
So, besides the fact that you're a badass who's pregnant and shooting and hunting, so which is pretty cool, by the way. What else do you do besides pretty much run this business? Do you guys?
That's a really great question. I don't do much. No, I'm very lucky. We do take a family vacation every January to Florida, and that is literally, like, the highlight of my year.
Yeah.
Because I don't mind. I really don't mind my work. I don't feel like I go to work every day, which is nice. I mean, some days suck, obviously. Like, you have bad days, as with any job, but
yeah.
I never wake up and I'm like, oh, God, I have to go, like, clock in, even though I don't clock in. But, like, I don't ever feel that way, so... To say that I do anything else, I don't. I'm also a real estate agent.
Well, that's what I was fixing. I messed up my whole question.
That's okay.
You do real estate too, so do you?
Yeah. So I just started that a couple years ago, just as something like an additional source of income.
Right.
It's very seasonal for me, obviously, because. Following season is super busy, and then getting ready for the colt starting is super busy. And then breeding season is all day long, pretty much from April to August. So if I can fit, I just had two showings this past Wednesday night, and I'll do showings for people, if you know, especially people that I know or things like that. But I try not to put too much on my plate, and my main focus will always be the horses, and they'll always come first, but it is nice to have, you know, help people find homes as well.
Right.
Because I am, like, I love home decor. I'm, like, a junkie, and I love, like, going and seeing the different, you know, architectures and how people have places set up. I love that. So, yeah, it's just a little fun, something else to do, just something else to get into, you know.
Well, I think it keeps you fresh, too, because you're right. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, to be able to do something for so many years and to do the same thing for so many years over and over, to be able to keep it fresh a little bit and do something else, it doesn't mean you don't necessarily hate what you do or don't want to do what you do. It just keeps it fresh a little bit. I mean, you know.
Right, and I definitely dealt with that a little bit because my house is right across the road from the barn. I walk to work every day. And for a few years, I had struggled pretty bad with really severe burnout and just, you know, never feeling like I could get away from my work. And when I kind of when I kind of like got over that and just realized that it's a blessing that I don't have to drive to work, and it's a blessing, like, I don't, when I realized in my mind that I don't have to be mentally here in this barn 24/7, I can be at home and it be my home, mm-hmm. and not just like a neighbor to my work, it got a lot better for me. I definitely don't feel that way anymore, but it
I'm
did.
Glad you brought
it
that real up.
Good. Yeah.
Because I've had a couple of different conversations with that. It is a thing. Burnout is a thing. And I think people, I keep denying it to myself. I'm like, no, Brie, you're not burnt out. You're not going to get burnt out. But I feel like I'm fixing to get there. I'm going to get there. And it's always good to, like, because we're humans, man. You can't expect perfection. Like, we're not God.
Right.
You can't expect people to not have emotions or not have bad days or not have mess ups and not have that type of stuff, no matter what you do. You know, give me a break. Like,
yeah. And I say, like, I'm blessed now, especially having kids. I have a babysitter that comes to my house, and I know that I can always just walk across the street and, like, check on them or say hi to them or do whatever, and that is very comforting to me, especially, like, nowadays, people, sending my kid to a daycare, no, I can't do that. Like, you never know what's going to happen. And I can't imagine doing that. And that's another big reason.
Well, it costs an arm and a leg, that's for sure.
I'm so thankful that we live where we live. And even our school system is so great. And it feels safe to me. We're such a small community. But, yeah, so just kind of having everything here and available and accessible is really nice for me anyway now since I've gotten over that. But
well, that is a good thing, because you know what, it is different. You've got kids involved. It's kind of a different, that's the whole thing, because I don't have kids. I don't, you know, but
sure,
I can't imagine having to deal with that now, like what you just said, having to send them to a daycare. For one, it costs mm-hmm. some people it's not even worth it to send them to daycare.
Might
stay at home.
It's like a mortgage. It's a mortgage for us. It's a mortgage for us still, even just having a babysitter come into our house. But you know what? You have to do what you have to do. And I recognize that I am not stay-at-home mom material. So even if it did, like, balance out and I would break even, I would still do it, because my mental health is, like, I need to be the best mom I can be, and I need to – and I love what I do, so there's no reason why I wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you just brought that up, the whole thing about mental health, because that's a lot to be able to juggle everything that you juggle, you know, full-time horses, full-time mom, mm-hmm. family, all that kind of stuff, you know, and mm-hmm. business owner. I don't think people give people like even me and you, you know, like we run our own business and do our own thing, a little bit more grace to what it takes to have to deal with the things that we deal with, you know.
Oh, and I know, you know, I was just talking to someone the other day, and they're like, oh, my intern, she is a barber also. And he's like, I'll just have people calling me at like 8 or 9 at night. And I'm like, oh yeah, girl. I'm like, I know. I was like, they're up for a long time. I would respond to anybody at any time. If it was midnight, if it was 1 a.m., if it was 8 p.m., like, I responded. Or if they called me, I would answer immediately, or I would call them right back. And as I've gotten older and I'm realizing, like, yes, this job is 24/7, but my communication doesn't have to be 24/7, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, as business owners, like, we are allowed and we should set, you know, specific time parameters on when we answer calls or when we allow people into our, you know, line of communication, because, again, it goes along with the burnout thing. If you're answering calls at 12 midnight, that'll wear you down after a while. It's really tough.
You're not telling me anything.
Yeah. And I actually even recently, not recently, maybe like the past year or two, I've gotten to the point where I will not do, like, I will not schedule any horse showings or anything like that on a Sunday. So I always take Sunday for my family, and we do, even if we just lay around all day. I'm like, that's fine, but at least we're all together, and we need that day for all of us. So.
Well, you're right. No, you're right. And it's hard, though, because I will answer at any point in time. And it's not a fear-based answer.
Yeah.
It's more like, you're the face of the business, and you don't want to let people down, and your business is your livelihood. It's a lot of stress, but I'm so glad you're bringing this up because it's hard.
My dad's just like that. Like you, he will answer anyone anytime, and he'll sometimes not scold me, but he'll be like, "Why aren't you calling them?" And I'm like, "Dad, it is 8 p.m. I will call them back tomorrow, and it will be okay if they are not going to be happy with me for setting a boundary for myself, then I don't want them as a client anyway. I'm sorry. That's just my personal opinion and how I feel. Obviously everybody's different, but
it
can be tough. It can be tough just trying to get everyone called back and make sure you're communicating with everyone.
It is hard because, you work for yourself and I'm a big believer in you can't turn down money when you work for yourself. So
you're right.
Because it's hard. It's hard. It's very, very, very hard, even
it
as a business owner, to just kind of, because you're right. You have to set a mental health boundary. You have to set a healthy boundary to kind of be like, okay, I can't do this 24/7. This is
not
healthy.
No.
Because I've been doing it for 24/7.
Yes. Take a break.
You're right. You're very, very right. So.
Yeah, no. I think also I had really bad postpartum with both of my first two kids. And I think, when you're in that, survival mode that is postpartum, you don't even think about work. And I think that's, nature, honestly. But at that moment, it made me realize, I'm allowed to set boundaries, and I should, because that is a really tough time for, new mothers. It's a really hard time, and that time did make me realize, I do need to take the time for myself. I need to just, put work aside when it gets to be, 7 o'clock at night, and just be a mom. Just be a mom, be a wife, be anything besides a business owner. So that, as bad as postpartum is for me and a lot of other people, it did teach me that, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't have kids, and you have kids. It's kind of a different thing. You have to, you have no other choice. You have to be able to.
Right.
Separate it and turn it off. And I can't imagine how that would feel to have the postpartum, but it does, it does exist, and I'm glad that you spoke on it. It does exist because there's a lot of women and moms that go through it,
Yep, it's tough. It is a really tough time, and I don't wish it on anybody, but it is very common, and it's just, we need to give these new moms a break.
Give them a break.
Yeah.
What do you think helped you through those times? The horses or any, what specific thing do you think kind of helped you get through that?
Oh, I was in therapy. No. Yeah, I did do therapy both times.
Hey, don't feel bad about therapy. I've been in therapy before. There ain't a damn thing wrong with therapy.
That and having a supportive husband is another thing. That, if your partner is not supportive, God, I can't imagine. That would be horrible. And supportive family, too. But, yes, horses, absolutely. Horses are amazing. They do amazing things for people. And I don't even know if people realize what they do, honestly.
Do you think they know when you're pregnant? Do you think they can sense it when you're around?
I don't know. Maybe. They definitely can tell when you're sad. I can tell you that.
right. You know those posts of those people where they're like, when you got mamas are pregnant, and they got their belly, and dogs will lay on the belly, or cats lay. I wonder if horses are the same way.
I don't know. I can't say I've noticed a difference really. Sure. But yeah, no, they definitely I can't even tell you how many nights I've been here. Even, not postpartum related, but just any time I've had, a crisis in my life, and I just, come over here and sit in the stall, or, man, horses are just, I always say this, they are true angels. Even the ones that want to kill you or whatever, there's got to got to be an underlying reason for this. Like, we can't blame them. And I'm like, they never... Horses are not logical. This is what I love about them. They're not logical. They don't really, like, hold things against you, but...
They are like angels, though. They really are.
Like, the good ones... God, the good ones... People don't know... I wish people could really experience just a really good horse at least once in their life. Like, I mean, everybody. Non-horse people, too. It's magical what they can add to your life and what they can do for you, and it's amazing what you can teach them. And, like, there's really no other animal. Like, you can try to freaking halter break a cow, but let me tell you something. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to be nice. I showed steers all through... for 10 years all through school. And my goodness, just like dragging those things around, I'm like, God, I'd have a colt halter broke in 10 minutes that walks better than this thing I've been halter breaking for a year. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Well, but, wait, yeah. whoa, pump the brakes. Have you done the colt starting before? Can you start the colt?
No.
Have you done that?
I haven't done a colt starting, but yes, I've started many, many horses here.
Oh, how cool is that?
That have went off, yeah. Yep, and most of them, I basically now, at this point, just start ones that we're keeping. But when it was just me here and another girl, we started everything that got sold, everything that we were keeping. So I've literally been in, like, every aspect of every part of this business. I mean... it's crazy.
That is so cool that you have started that many animals because, I mean, there are some people that would kill to have that type of experience and to feel. Because, you know, I mean, I'm not saying anything you don't know. Horses are really more about a feel than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like you can just, it's not step-by-step putting a puzzle together when you own a horse.
Right.
It's, you know, more feel. And for you to have that much experience, that much feel, there are some people out there that kill to have that.
Well, I know. And it starts, I'm going to tell you, it really starts halter breaking. I can tell you how a horse is going to be pretty much from, like, the first or second halter breaking session. And I think that's why halter breaking is one of my favorite parts of the whole thing, is because, gosh, those little babies are so smart and so, like, they retain so much. And from the first day to the second day, it's like a freaking... light bulb went off, and they're so, gosh, it's just like, it's amazing. I can't even describe it. It's so fun, and then you just, once they're healthy broke, you kick them out, and, you know, I might not touch them for 6 months after that, and you bring them back in, and they remember everything you taught them. It's just, I can't say enough about horses. I really can't. It's just,
now, do you keep the little halters on them with the little leashes? No, I say leash.
No, I don't.
With the lead rope, sorry.
No, I don't. We halter them and take the halter off every session, so they're not dragging anything. So.
Okay. I have seen that before. You know, you see that where people in the horse industry, like, their babies keep a halter on them and let them get used to it. I didn't know if that was, like, I don't remember how we did it, but.
I have, like, a small phobia of keeping any halter on any horse that's not, like, in my vision. Just because of things I've seen before, I just, gosh, if they would get caught on something, or it would just, that would be so terrifying. So I don't leave halters on, but, some people do, and that's a personal preference, but it's just not my personal preference.
I'm picking up what you're throwing. When growing up, we were really big about you didn't leave the halter on because they could step on it. They could get it all hooked on something. They could, they could kill themselves with it. So we were always taught to take them off, but I've just seen, I've been told throughout the industry and time that, you know, when you break them when they're young, you'll see people keep the little baby halters on and have like a little rope hanging down, and they want to, you know, quote unquote, make them get used to it. And so it's always like, okay, well, it's still a horse. I mean, like,
and babies,
same rule apply.
Yeah, they're so fragile, and it's just take the extra, like, 15 minutes that it might take to put the halter on if you want to do something with them is my advice if it matters or if it amounts to anything. But it's safer, and, you know, your horse has to get used to you actually putting the halter on anyway. So just do it.
Just do it right.
Yeah, that's my opinion. But, you know, everybody has an opinion.
Well, I am just so, like, kind of taken back. I think you're obviously not a hole in the wall, but all of the stuff that you mm-hmm. offer is just not, this is way bit bigger than what I thought it was, which sure. is a great thing. I mean, mm-hmm. like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you took the time to talk to me about all of these, all the things you've got going on. Oh, here's a whole nother one right here. Duels
yeah.
Blue Peppy. So you've got one, two, how many stallions
yeah.
do you have there?
So Duels Blue Peppy is the rain cow horse that I was talking about earlier, who is sterile. So his semen is no good anymore, unfortunately. It hasn't. The youngest babies I have by him are two, actually, and they were, I did have two of them in this last colt starting. But that will be the end of them. I think I have six or so broodmare daughters of his that I have, but it's not enough, but it's what we're going to get, I guess. I don't have any semen put back on him, unfortunately, which is, hindsight is 2020. So I have plenty of semen on these other stallions, frozen and safe, so we'll have that in case of anything. But, no, Dooley has, gosh, he taught me how to ride. I thought I knew how to ride until we bought him, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, and I got on him, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't. I had to, I had to call the guy we bought him from and just get pointers, because there's no broke horse, in my opinion. There's no horses broke quite like a rain cow horse. I mean, they can do the cutting and the reining, and they can, you know, they're not just cutters and not just reiners, but they have to be both, and it takes a really special horse to be able to be all of those things at once.
Yeah.
And that will definitely be one of my criteria for picking another new stallion, is that they must be a finished rain cow horse, because my goodness, if you can do anything on him. And funny thing, actually, he's Dooley has turned out with a couple old mares that are not really, they aren't able to be bred either, but I was like, you know, if something, you know, miraculous happens and one of them becomes in foal, I'll be thrilled. But not getting my hopes up, but at least they're having a fun summer.
Right. Well, you are right about that. The rain cow horses can literally do all of it. Like, I was talking to somebody else about it. But, you know, if you think about it, you got the rain cow. You've got mm-hmm. rainers in their own little world. You got cutters in their mm-hmm. own little world. You got the cow horse and ranch people in their little world. And now you have rain cow that goes, okay, well, we'll just do all of that at once.
Yeah. It's so amazing. And like I said, it's a totally different world. I had rode cutters my whole life growing up, and that was all I was used to. And just learning how to turn around a cow horse is, I mean, it's not anything like a cutter can do, or, you know, has been trained to do, I should say. And it really opened up a lot of different avenues for me too. I'm thankful for him as well. I mean, he's really been a huge asset to us as well, but
he's pretty. Well, he's the one. He's gonna stay there with you, though.
Forever.
One of them.
Yep.
He's gonna die on the hill.
Yep, he is going to. I've not made the rough decision to geld him yet, but I may geld him, and my daughter or one of my kids will definitely ride him for some years to come. He's not terribly old. He's only 20, I think. And so
that ain't bad at all. He's got 10, 15 more years.
I know. So, yeah, I think he was born in 04. Or, no, he's born in 03, so he's 21. And, yeah, so they'll have something really broke to ride, and I think it's super important that, you know, people learn to ride on broke horses. I don't quite understand putting green people on green horses that don't know anything, but, you know, teach their own.
Wait, that's funny you just said that, because I just ran across a post where somebody said that. They were like, don't buy your kids a green horse so they can grow up together. And they're very right, because even, like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, my parents were pretty smart, knock on wood. We mm-hmm. had a very, very broke
pretty, not too old, but I'd say 15 to 18 year old horse that we grew up on first. Then we mm-hmm. could go, then I could go to my 3 year old, and then
exactly.
You know, like, I don't understand that either. Why would you put them in that predicament? You need a horse that's going to take care of them.
Yeah. Well, and also, kind of going along with that, when I was actively starting the two-year-olds here, I always made my broke horses a priority, because if you don't ride a broke horse for a while, you kind of lose sense of what that feels like, and you need to know what a broke horse feels like in order to kind of transfer it over to your two- and three-year-olds. And so if you have a
broke
horse,
that's a good analogy.
And you're a colt starter, like, keep riding them. Keep doing it, because you don't want to lose the feel, and your two-year-olds need that feel. So, yeah, that's another little tidbit of advice I have, not that it's worth anything, but.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not going to break any horses at all, but I think it's great to know. It's cool to know this kind of stuff, because you're right. I mean, like, if you don't, mm-hmm. what's that old saying, like, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it. So,
yeah.
I didn't even think about that. That does make sense, to make sure that you stay on those broke ones.
Yep, for sure.
So it'll help you with the new ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And your young horses deserve it. Everybody does. Your old horses will appreciate the exercise, and the young horses will appreciate the knowledge. So.
Well, I'm glad y'all did it, and I didn't. I trust what you're saying.
Yeah. So.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me and to teach me all of this, because this is just freaking cool as hell. I've just been, like, on your website, just being all over the place, because
mm-hmm.
I just think this is really cool that you're doing what you're doing, and you guys have built this for so many years. It's really cool, and I'm glad Terry kind of brought you up and put me in contact with you.
I love him. He's somebody, like, you know how you just meet people and you just instantly feel, like, connected to them, or, like, that you've known them your whole life? He's one of those people to me. He's just, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it.
He's got a good soul. You feel like he's got a good soul.
He does. I think he does, too. And he's not showy about things. He doesn't, you know, he's not braggy about things. And I really appreciate that. And he's so sweet. I love him. He's going to judge for me the next 2 years at the colt starting. I don't know if he told you that, but.
No, I have no idea. Oh, and you know what, which I think is so cool, because I was a little oblivious to the whole colt starting, how it worked. You know, I mean, I just mm-hmm. knew it was an event, but I didn't really know exactly how it went. And he explained to me, which I think is really cool, you basically just go pick up this horse that's not mm-hmm. been touched, or it's just been halter broke, that's it. And then mm-hmm. you have to get it through the certain obstacles or whatever. And mm-hmm. then I didn't know that it was judged. I thought it was just whoever could finish.
Yeah. No, it's judged. The first year, it's real quick. It's funny. We had an allotted amount of time for each session, as we still do, but it was a longer session. And these horses were progressing so fast, and we didn't even use, like, half the time. I'm like, man, we could do these in, like, hour-and-a-half sessions. And so these horses are only getting 3 rides, an hour-and-a-half each. Like, they're not riding that long, but they're getting worked that long. Mm-hmm. And then they can go through an obstacle course. I guess that's amazing, I think. Horses are incredible.
I mean, you know, who would have thought? Because, you know, you get sold on the fact that, okay, well, I need your horse for 60 days or 90 days, or they need to stay in training and do this. And your average person just thinks, oh, okay, well, it's just a long, long process, which mm-hmm. for specific training it is. But to get them from just basically nothing to having a saddle on, you don't. To me, I think it's cool as hell to be able to see it go that quick, too. You don't.
There's, yeah.